WMFO, Medford. Okay, if you're just joining us, I've already been playing for an hour. That was Bernard Herrmann, Taxi Driver, the theme to Taxi Driver. I don't recollect the movie. It sounds a lot like the beginning, with the saxophones and so forth. That's from the Bernard Herrmann Essential Film Music that I got. Again, he was married to Lucille Fletcher, who wrote two very notable radio dramas, and Sorry, Wrong Number, and The Hitchhiker. This one that I'm about to play, this drama, it's called The Mel Blanc Show. It aired on the 5th of November, 1946. With most folks, you should recognize Mel Blanc as well as Alan Reed. I'll talk about that a little bit more after the show. This is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Colgate Tooth Powder for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle presents The Mel Blanc Show with Mary Jane Croft, Joe Kearns, Hans Conried, Earl Ross, The Sportsman, Victor Miller and his orchestra, and Mel Blanc, the creator of the voice of Bugs Bunny.
What's up, Doc?
Playing his new character, Zookie.
Hello, everybody. Hi.
And starring himself in person, Mel Blanc. Good evening, folks.
It's all fine and dandy, sugar candy, when I've got you. Then I only see the sunny side. Even trouble has its funny side. When you're gone, sugar candy, I get lonesome, I get so blue. When you're handy, it's fine and dandy, but when you're gone, what can I do? I get lonesome, kind of blue. When you're gone, what can I do?
Thank you, Sportsman and Victor Miller. Well, last night was date night in Mel Blanc's little town, and in almost every house, prospective father-in-laws were bidding cheery goodbyes to courting swains. In the Anderson house, Mr. Anderson was saying, "Good night, Joe."
"Good night, Mr. Anderson."
And in the Brown household, Mr. Brown was saying,
"Good night, Sam."
"Good night, Mr. Brown."
And in the Colby house, where Mel Blanc spent the evening courting his girl, Betty, Betty's father, Mr. Colby, was saying,
"Get out of here and never come back again."
"Good night, Mr. Colby."
So the next morning, we find Mel standing in his fix-it shop, talking to Betty's kid brother, Tommy.
"You know, Tommy, I can't figure your father out."
"What do you mean, Mel?"
"Well, I don't know whether he likes me or not. Last night he threw me out of the house, and yet the night before he said, 'Mel, go out and take my car.' He even escorted me to the driver's seat and started the motor, waved goodbye, and said, 'Mel, run her all night.'"
"Well, what's wrong with that?"
"In a locked garage?" "It doesn't look right."
"Well, it's your own fault, Mel. You act too much like a weakling."
"I'm a weakling? Your father's the one who's a weakling. Why, yesterday he was strangling me for 10 minutes before he finally let go of my throat."
"Well, that's because he thought you were dead."
Well, I fooled him. Blue is my natural color.
Mel, why don't you use a different approach to my old man? Stop walking in on your hands and knees. Why don't you be pleasant? Crack a few jokes.
Say, that's a great idea, Tommy. After all, I'm a natural-born comedian. Listen to this great joke, kid. It seems George Washington's father bought him a little hatchet. And that night, little George, instead of chopping down a cherry tree, sneaked into his father's room and tried to take a chip off the old block. You get a chip off the old block. Hatchet, hatchet.
Hatchet yourself. You laid it.
It's a fine way to talk to your prospective brother-in-law. Don't forget, someday I'll marry your sister Betty, and then, who knows, you may even have a little nephew that looks just like me.
So I'll be a monkey's uncle. Oh, now stop kidding yourself, Mel. You'll never marry my sister as long as my father hates you like he does.
Yeah, that's what you think. Oh, you better go, Tommy. Here comes my lodge president, Mr. Cushing. He's a very important guy.
Oh, is that the lodge Pop is trying to get into? The Loyal Order of Benevolent Zebras?
Yeah.
Well, greeting, Brother Zebra. Ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo-ugga.
Greetings, mighty potentate. Ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo-ugga. So long, Tommy. This is all secret lodge business.
Yeah, I get it. Ugga-ugga-boo. What's such a secret? I said that before I could talk.
Well, I just came around to remind you about the important meeting tonight, Mel. Looks like we're about to get that priority to build a new lodge auditorium.
Gee, I thought there were a lot of people ahead of us.
Well, the top priority went to the pool hall. Then came the saloon and then the bowling alley. We're ahead of only one person.
Who's that?
A veteran who wants to build a house. And another thing, Mel, we're voting on Colby's application for membership.
I thought Betty's father was voted in last year.
Well, he didn't get quite enough votes, so we declared him a zebra without stripes.
Well, what's that?
A jackass.
Well, I sure would like to be there to vote for him, but I've got something more important. I got to go up to Mr. Colby's house and square myself with him.
Why, are you in trouble with Colby again? What'd you do this time to make him mad?
Well, last night Mr. Colby finally got delivery on his new 1946 console radio. You should have seen it. They delivered it in a beautiful plastic crate. In fact, it was so beautiful it got me all confused.
Well, what did you do?
I threw out the radio and plugged in the crate.
So that's why he tossed you out of the house again, huh?
Yeah. I've been tossed on the lawn so much I'm beginning to feel like the afternoon paper. Gee, if I only knew what to do to make Mr. Colby like me. I can't even get near him.
Well, Mel, why don't you send your assistant, Zookie, over? You let him deliver a box of candy and attach a personal note. Nothing better.
Hey, that's a good idea. Thank you, mighty potentate.
Well, anything to help a brother zebra, you know. So long, Mel. Ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo-ugga.
Ugga-boo-boo, ugga-ugga-boo-boo.
Oh, careful, Mel. You slipped up on that password.
Well, what do you mean?
You uggered when you should have booed.
Now to get a box of candy and write a little note. Boy, this is great. I can just see Zookie giving it to Mr. Colby now.
Oh, hello, Zookie. What brings you here?
Oh, hello, Mr. Colby. Mel sent me over with this box of candy.
Oh, huh. That nincompoop Mel is trying to get in good with me. Whoa. 2 pounds of assorted fruits and nuts. And a note from him, too.
Yeah, it's a poem. I'll read it to you. Roses are red. Violets are blue. That's why I send these fruits and nuts to you.
Oh, Betty. Betty.
Yes.
Look what Mel sent over.
Oh, gee. Oh, that's nice. Oh, hello, Zookie.
Hello,
Betty.
Thanks.
Zookie, Mel must have spent a lot of money on this candy.
Well, he took it out of the bank. You see, he traded in his accordion. He collected some money. He cut my salary.
Well, the candy's nice, but I don't know whether I ought to forgive Mel for what he did to my new radio. I got a repairman coming in to fix the radio, and it's costing me $50.
Daddy, why don't you give Mel another chance?
I don't want him near that radio. Tonight my favorite program is on, and I want to hear it.
Oh, but Mel could fix your radio. He fixed the Anderson radio, and now it brings in all the you can get Africa. You can get China. You can get Russia. It's dead as a doornail.
However, I can't overlook the fact that Mel did make a peace offering. So, Zookie, you may tell Mel he can come over here tonight to see Betty. But he's got to keep his hands off the radio.
Oh, I'll promise for Mel, Father. Zookie, now you run back to the fix-it shop and tell Mel.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is swell. When I tell Mel, why, he'll be so happy he'll take me in his arms and he'll hug and he'll kiss. Hey, Betty, you better go.
Use Colgate tooth powder, keep smiling just right. Use it each morning and use it each night. Don't take a chance with your romance. Use Colgate tooth powder.
A girl who has a breath of trouble is seldom asked to date up double. Don't let a breath of trouble, I mean unpleasing breath, hurt your popularity. Thousands who don't even suspect it are victims of unpleasing breath. So be on your guard. Do this. Brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder. For Colgate tooth powder cleans your breath as it cleans your teeth. Yes, scientific tests have definitely proved that in 7 cases out of 10, Colgate tooth powder instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. What's more, no dentifrice at any price cleans your teeth more quickly and thoroughly than Colgate tooth powder. Remember to buy it first thing. And remember the name, Colgate tooth powder, with the accent on powder.
Don't take a chance with your romance. Use Colgate tooth powder.
Now back to Victor Miller and the Sportsman doing 5 minutes more.
Give me 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more. Let me stay in your arms. Here am I begging for only 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more of your charm.
All week long I dreamed about our Saturday date.
Don't you know that Sunday morning you can sleep late? Give me 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more. Let me stay forever in your arms.
With a gift of a 2-pound box of nuts and fruits, Mel had made Mr. Colby forget the fact that he almost ruined Mr. Colby's brand new 1946 console radio. So what was a scene of terror last night has turned into a meeting of jolly fellowship tonight as we once again find Mel in the Colby home.
Try this one, Mr. Colby. It's a liquid cherry.
Oh, no, Mel. I know a caramel and I see one.
It's a liquid cherry, Mr. Colby.
Don't tell me. I know it's a caramel. Here, I'll squeeze it.
Well, with a little whipped cream on your head, you'd look just like a sundae. You know, Mr. Colby, that's a wonderful radio you got there.
Yes, and I've waited 5 years for it. I can hardly wait for the repairman to come and hook it up.
Gosh, it's a beauty. 8 push buttons, and all you have to do is press it like little guy. Mr. Colby, get your hands off my throat.
Well, you keep your hands off that radio.
Oh, but Mr. Colby, I'm the handiest man in this town. Even when I was a kid, they called me Kid Fix-It. I'll never forget when I was 10, there was a gas leak in my neighbor's house. Right away, they called me. So I went down the cellar looking for that gas leak with a candle, a box of matches, and a cigarette lighter.
I'll bet they threw you out of the house.
What house? But no kidding, I can really fix that radio.
Oh, hello, Mel.
Hi, Betty.
Daddy, are you getting angry again?
No, but your boyfriend had better stop his stupid bragging. He's just proving what I've always said. His head is full of hot air.
Father, that's not fair. Everyone in town is saying that his head is full of hot air. But believe me, there's nothing in it. Father, Mel is never going to get anywhere unless someone gives him a chance. And who else should give him a chance but those closest to him?
That's right, Mr. Colby. And after all, I'm going to marry your daughter.
You're going to marry my daughter? You ever thought about me?
Yes, but Betty's much prettier. Oh.
But Betty, Mel can't support you. You need the necessities of life. How will you get them?
We'll charge them.
All right, you'll charge them. 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. And then what will you do?
We'll move to another neighborhood and start all over again. Doesn't everybody?
Why? I'd have to be an idiot to let you marry my daughter.
Thank you for your consent.
Oh, I've had enough of this. I'm going to...
Oh, look, Mr. Colby, I've taken all I can from you.
Oh, really? What are you going to do about it?
How would you like to step outside?
That suits me fine. Come on.
Okay. Well, Betty, now that we're alone... I think that I ought to...
Mel Blanc.
What'd you say, Mr. Colby?
Father, control yourself. You can't strike Mel. After all, he soon may be your own lodge brother.
Well, yes. I was supposed to run down to the meeting and see if they'd voted me in. Oh, I'm late already. All right, Betty, you stay here and watch Mel. Now, don't you let him touch that radio. The repairman ought to be here any minute.
Now, don't you worry about it. Goodbye, Father.
Well, goodbye, Betty.
Aren't you going to say goodbye to Mel?
You know, there's one thing that worries me, Betty. With your father hating me so much, you're liable to begin to hate me, too.
Oh, no, darling. I'll always love you. Even though I don't know exactly why. After all, you're not handsome. You're not intelligent. You're not successful. You're not...
Please, Betty, this could go on all night. Well, let's forget about your father for a minute, darling. We're all alone now, and I have a much more important question to ask you.
Oh, Mel. Oh, this is so sudden.
Oh, Betty.
Yes, Mel?
Betty, I...
Go on, Mel. Ask me that question.
All right. Betty, can I fix your father's radio?
Mel, you stay away from that radio.
No, this is my big chance to show off to your father.
But, Mel, are you sure you know what you're doing?
Betty, how can I go wrong? Oh, here's the book of instructions. I'll start right from the beginning. It says, follow the instructions in this booklet very carefully, as this radio represents the result of 102 years of extensive electronic research and can be ruined in 5 minutes by a jerk like you. Betty, your father wrote in this book. Ah, who needs this book anyway? Betty, bring me a hammer and a corkscrew.
Oh, just a minute. Oh, Mel, it's the repairman.
Oh, we don't need him. Send him away.
But...
The radio's all fixed. I'm sorry you had to come.
But...
Is everything all right, Mel?
Sure, Betty. We're all set.
But, Mel, there's a tube left over.
Well, let's not waste it. Screw it into the chandelier. Well, let's go. Turn the knob, Betty.
Nothing's happening.
Well, you got to give the set a chance to warm up. You see, the tubes are beginning to light up. See, it's getting nice and warm. Now the wires are beginning to light up. Hey, now the set is beginning to light up.
Shall I call the mechanic?
Call the fire department.
Oh, don't be silly. I'll pull out the plug. Oh, gosh, you've ruined the radio.
Oh, Betty, this is the darkest moment of my life.
Well, it's the same for me, Mel.
Well, you're a little better off. I left my life insurance policy in your name.
Oh, Mel, here comes Father. Why don't you try to get away?
Oh, it's too late. Oh, wait a minute. Why should I die without a struggle? I got an idea. I'm a born actor.
What are you thinking of, Mel?
I'll get in back of the radio set and act. Whatever your father tunes in, I'll do.
Oh, Mel, that's ridiculous.
Well, sure, I could do it. I'll hop in back of the set right now.
Oh, Father, I didn't expect you back so soon.
Well, I haven't finished voting at the lodge yet, so I came back. Where's Mel?
Well, he's in back of the, went back.
Oh, went back. Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, Benny, I just saw the mechanic's truck pull away from the house. Now I can listen to my radio.
Oh, but Daddy...
Now step aside, Benny. It's time for my favorite program, the Movie Guild Playhouse. And tonight they have two big stars. I'll turn it on.
Oh, chérie, I love you. I love you. I love you.
Oh, Pepe, do you really? Really, do you? Do you really?
Oh, chérie, you know I do, I do, I do.
Really? I'm so glad you do. Really, I am. Really.
This is dreadful. I'm going to write to the Movie Guild Playhouse people.
Address all letters to 160 South Vista Street, Los Angeles.
This is unbelievable. I got to get some music. Oh, yes, the Philharmonic is on.
The Philharmonic? Oh, but Daddy, he can't.
I'll just push the button here.
And now the house lights dim in Carnegie Hall. The spotlight picks up the conductor as he mounts the podium. And now the orchestra plays the overture from Tristan and Isolde.
Good heavens. I've never heard the Philharmonic play like that.
And now the Philharmonic continues with Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Oh, well, maybe this will be a little better. This is impossible. I'll switch back to the Movie Guild.
Pepe, I do love you, really. I do, really.
And I do, too. Do, too. Do, too.
Oh, it's getting worse all the time. I'll turn back to the Philharmonic. Oh, no! Oh, there's something wrong with this radio. Oh, maybe I'll have better luck on the short wave.
Ashlovich, Matuka, Daronik, Giboya, Jefinia, leaving by 50,000 votes. Kovniak, Bianite, Luvia, 16, UCLA, Nyati. Pania, Bruka, Ichi, Adoma, Pania, Lukia, Eastern Columbia, Broadway at night.
In my life. Something is wrong with this radio.
Father,
I'll just feel around in the back of the set. Now, let me, Benny.
Yes, Father?
One of these tubes has hair on it. Wait just a minute. I look behind the set. Mel Blanc, what have you got to say for yourself? Mel Blanc, I'm going to take you and break every bone in... it's Mr. Cushing. Oh, come in, sit down. I'll be through in just a minute.
Greetings, Mel. Agagabuok. Mr. Colby, why are you standing on Mel's head?
I'm not standing on his head. I'm jumping up and down.
Well, you'd better stop, because the lodge is deadlocked. 12 for you and 12 against you. And Mel has the deciding vote.
He has? He has? Well, Mel, my son, come on, get up off the floor. Are you, going to vote for me?
Well, get your foot out of my mouth first, Mr. Colby.
Mel, my boy, tell me, am I in the lodge?
Mr. Cushing, let me whisper my decision in your ear.
Well, am I in?
Mr. Colby, allow me to be the first to say... Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga.
Mel, my boy!
Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, 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 ugga.
Mel Blanc will be back in just a minute.
Use Colgate tooth powder, keep smiling just right. Use it each morning and use it each night. Don't take a chance with your romance. Use Colgate tooth powder.
A breath of trouble, I mean unpleasing breath, can lose you friends and alienate people. So ask yourself if you could have this social handicap. Best thing to do is to guard against it. Brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder. For Colgate tooth powder cleans your breath as it cleans your teeth. Yes, scientific tests have definitely proved that in 7 cases out of 10, Colgate tooth powder instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. What's more, no dentifrice at any price cleans your teeth more quickly and thoroughly than Colgate tooth powder. Remember to buy it first thing. And remember the name Colgate tooth powder with the accent on powder.
Don't take a chance with your romance. Use Colgate tooth powder.
And this is Mel Blanc saying thanks for listening. Good night, and
that's all, folks.
This is Bud Easton reminding you that Colgate tooth powder, for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle, brings you the Mel Blanc Show every Tuesday at this time. Be sure to join us again next Tuesday night for more fun with Mel and the people you'll meet in Mel Blanc's Fix-It Shop.
Say hello to Halo Shampoo for naturally bright and beautiful hair. Remember, even finest soaps and soap shampoo.
Okay, that was the Mel Blanc Show. The original air date on that was the 5th of November, 1946. They recognize a lot of voices there, I would imagine. Alan Reed was part of that show. And he would go on to voice Fred Flintstone. I'm not sure who he played in that particular episode. That was titled The New Radio, where Melga hopped in the back of the radio and did all of his skits. You heard some Speedy Gonzales and some Pepe Le Pew. A little bit of Bugs. A little bit of Porky when he does that Zookie character, which is supposed to be his sidekick. Sorry, I'm trying to figure something out here. Again, original air date, the 5th of November, 1946. I'm going to go ahead and do FCC obligation. This is Arthur with the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Henry. Actual real George is in the studio with me right now. He ran right over here after he heard the Mel Blanc Show. Wanted to see what was going on. Next up, this is another one of those obscure ones I picked up off of old time radio, CAT. Called I Devise and Bequeath. This is episode number 3. I didn't get any information on it in terms of an original air date, a sponsor, a station. It might be in there. I haven't listened to the whole program. There was nothing in On the Air, the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio by John Dunning. And of course, I'll leave any Googling to the public. So here, without further ado, this is I Devise and Bequeath.
I Devise and Bequeath. The stories of strange wills made by strange people, starring Warren William and featuring Marvin Miller and Loreen Tuttle with Howard Culver, and the original music of Del Castillo. I devise and bequeath to my heirs the 7 deadly sins: despair, anger, jealousy, revenge, lust, envy, and hate. And here is our distinguished star of radio, screen, and stage, Warren William.
I devise and bequeath our stories of strange wills gathered from probate courts the world over. Many of them, written on deathbeds or under highly emotional circumstances, clearly show that the writers of the wills used this last chance of self-expression to vindicate within their own hearts the flagrant sins of omission and remission made during their lifetimes. Names, places, and time have all been changed in order that no reflection may fall on any person or persons living or dead. From the dusty vaults of the probate court, we bring you documentary proof of the old adage that man is the strangest of all creatures. You'll presently see what I mean. But first, I'd like to have you listen to a few words from our sponsor.
Back to Warren William as John Francis O'Connell in Black Interlude.
Of all the sins that live within the human heart, none is so deadly, so lasting as hate. Unchecked, it bears the bitter fruit of mental and spiritual annihilation, nor does it always end with death. Its vibrations reach out of the grave like the tentacles of an octopus in a last effort to win the final victory of a bitter revenge. Why did Francis X. Blair hate his only son, Paul, with a hatred as intense and boundless as the elements? The reason is as old as Eve. Francis X. Blair, rich, handsome, and a widower, and his son, Paul, were both in love with the same girl. Francis X. Blair had been my client for nearly 10 years. He was dominant, relentless, and headstrong, the kind of a man who took what he wanted, no matter what the hurt. Paul was like his dead mother, shy and sensitive. His talents ran to the literary. How he ever managed to take the lovely and beautiful Phyllis Lamar away from his father, I'll never know. But insiders told me that it was just a case of love at first sight. Everyone who knew about it was anxiously waiting to hear whom her final choice would be, father or son. And then one cold November night, Francis X. Blair invited me over to his penthouse apartment to discuss his will. I knew that something extraordinary was about to happen.
Telling me to be a good loser, John, may be the conventional thing to say. But unfortunately, I've never lived in the conventional manner.
Oh, why can't you forget and forgive them both, Francis? After all, Phyllis has made her choice. And while she may prefer Paul as a husband, you can still have her as a daughter.
I'm sorry that I can't agree with you. I consider my son in the light of a thief. A love thief, if you like. But the fact remains that he deliberately took away from me the one thing in my life that I cherished most highly. I would have preferred it if he had robbed my safe. It would have been more honorable. He's got to pay for his sin, and she will pay for her folly.
Why don't you sleep over it for a few days, Francis? I'm sure that with sober reflection...
It won't be necessary. I have made my final decision. From this day on, my son is disinherited. I want you to redraft my will, cutting him off with $1.
But surely you aren't serious. Paul is just out of school a few years. He isn't equipped.
Let him starve, then, and the girl with him. She'll come crawling back to me on her knees one of these fine days, begging my forgiveness.
Francis, I beg you not to be hasty.
I'm sorry, but it's too late. I hate Paul Blair as I've never hated another soul, living or dead. I want him to suffer, just as he has made me suffer. I'll hate him until my dying breath. And if I can, I'll go on hating him from my grave. And this is the last time I will ever mention his name again, as long as I live.
Nor did the next 2 years bring a change of heart. Francis X. Blair grew more bitter day by day, if such a thing was possible. His will was prepared and executed according to his wishes. But I still hoped that before he died, he would relent and repent. Paul and Phyllis, meanwhile, were quietly married and were living in a small furnished apartment on the outskirts of town. On the night of their first wedding anniversary, they invited me to dinner. And I want to offer my congratulations on this, the first year of your happiness together.
And don't think we haven't been happy, Mr. O'Connell. Paul has been wonderful.
Well, I had to make up in some way for all the millions she lost by not marrying Dad.
Oh, hush with such talk and nonsense.
No, how is Dad, Mr. O'Connell? You know, I haven't seen or heard from him in almost 2 years. Tell me, has he softened any?
No, I'm afraid not, Paul. In fact, he's more bitter than ever. Of course, there's always a chance, always the possibility, man.
We don't want any chances, do we, Paul? We have our own plans now, our own dreams, too. I think good comes out of everything, Mr. O'Connell. If Paul hadn't been disinherited, do you think he would ever have taken a job as a reporter? That's where he learned to write.
And I agree with you, Phyllis. I think Paul has a brilliant future as a writer. One day, with you behind him, he'll...
Oh, everything would be fine if Dad would only forgive me. I know it sounds foolish to you, Mr. O'Connell, but his continual hatred for me is preying on my mind. You see, I've never hated, and the thought of someone hating me, well...
I'm sure you feel badly about it, Paul. But you see, you've wounded your father's ego. That's a dangerous thing to do to anybody.
I've told Phyllis this before, and she laughed at me, but I want to tell you too, Mr. O'Connell. Sometimes I imagine I hear my father laughing at me. Laughing as though he expected something to happen to me. Something...
Oh, please, Paul, get that thought out of your mind. Nothing that your father can say or do will change anything. Our lives are our own. We're the masters of our own destinies. Voodoo, witchcraft, and superstitions are obsolete. And when next you see Francis X. Blair, Mr. O'Connell... Please ask him to stay out of Paul's dreams. He may not know it, but I'm getting a problem child on my hands.
But I never saw Francis X. Blair again, that is, alive. He died in his sleep just 2 days after my visit with Paul and Phyllis, and he had neither forgiven nor forgotten. I attended the funeral and sat with Paul and Phyllis. Paul looked disconsolate, discouraged that the hatred in his father's heart was being carried to his grave.
Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, et Pater et Filius, et Spiritus Sanctus, requiescat in pace. Amen.
As the little funeral procession walked slowly out of the church, I wondered if this was to be the end of hate. Surely death would be the great healer. Had not the late Francis X. Blair done enough hurt to more than compensate for his lost love? Well, I thought so. But early one evening, several months later... Yes?
Mr. O'Connell?
Yes?
Oh, Mr. O'Connell, this is Phyllis Blair. I've only got a minute to speak to you. I'm here at the airport with Paul. We're leaving, Mr. O'Connell, leaving for good. We're flying to the West Coast.
For good? Heavens, what's happened?
Paul is standing just outside the booth. I don't want him to hear me. Mr. O'Connell, Paul said that he couldn't live here another day. Since his father's death, he's grown worse instead of better. He says that he hears his father still laughing at him. He says if he doesn't go immediately, he's liable to lose his mind. Oh, I've got to go now. He's getting suspicious.
Phyllis, I want you to keep in touch with me. I'll help you, both of you, all that I can. Maybe it's best... Hello? Hello? Hello?
Number, please.
Oh, never mind, operator. So this was it. The hatred of father for son was really living on, coming up like some shrouded ghost from the tomb to encompass and destroy... I recall the old familiar proverb, "Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned." I wondered why they stopped with a woman. What about a man? What about the dead? Where did fury end, I wondered? A few months later, I received my first letter from Phyllis. The change had done Paul good. He'd turned to freelance writing and was concentrating on radio scripts. They were building their lives anew. Yes, it was a long way from the grave of Francis X. Blair to the West Coast. Long enough, I hoped. I felt happy about Paul and Phyllis for the first time in months. But one night, quite unexpectedly, I received a telegram. It was from Phyllis. She told me the very thing that I'd been fearing. Paul had been committed. Committed to an institution for the insane. She begged me to come at once, and I saw there was no time to be lost. How to fight against a man dead these many months was a problem that offered no immediate solution. But there had to be an answer. Of that I was sure, and I meant to find it. I left that night by plane to enlist my services in the fight against hate and its vicious allies, the seven deadly sins.
Oh, Mr. O'Connell, I'm so glad you've come. I'm so glad. It's been a nightmare.
And I'm glad to be here too, young lady. I intend to see this thing through no matter how long it takes.
Oh, thank you so much.
Just take hold of yourself now until we have this thing licked. First, I want you to tell me everything that happened to Paul since the day you came. Then I hope I'll know what to do.
Well, as I told you in my letter, Paul went into radio. His training on the newspaper was excellent, and he turned out several very good scripts. One show in particular he calls Happy Valley was seriously considered by several agencies. Paul had written over 30 chapters. You see, it's a daily serial about a disabled war veteran who comes home. And the story he tells about his readjustment into a normal society.
What happened to it, Phyllis?
He had a meeting 2 weeks ago at the agency. As I understand it, several people were present. Directors, actors, and the man who was to sign Paul to a contract, a Mr. Henley, the agency's producer. He took Paul into his private office. Everything was going along nicely. They were about to come to an agreement.
I've gone over your scripts very carefully. You've got a fine show here, Mr. Blair. I've had the staff read it, and they all liked it.
Well, thank you very much. Very much, Mr. Henley. You don't know how I appreciate all this.
Don't thank me. I'm a businessman. I'm not doing this out of sympathy. You've come up with something we like, and it's a deal. I'll have my secretary draw up the contracts. 5 shows a week, 52 weeks, with an option for renewal, and you'll receive $100 a show. That's the minimum scale, I know, but still a lot of money.
Well, that sounds good to me, Mr. Henley. I'm ready to sign.
No, excuse me.
Shirley.
Henley. What? Called off. Why does he have to get a sore throat when he's singing for us? Tell him I'll fly east today. Tell him to meet me at the airport. Yes, I'll leave here in about an hour. He can't do that to me. Hey, Blair, I can't sign your contract today. I've got to rush east. Come back next week. I'll have my secretary get in touch with you. See you later. I'm sorry, Mr. Blair, but it just can't be helped.
And so, Mr. O'Connell, that's how it ended. Paul didn't say anything when he came home. He retired early. And sometime during the night...
Oh. What's that? Who's there? Oh. Phyllis! Phyllis!
What?
Do you hear it? Do you hear it?
Paul, what is it? You're what?
It's my father. He's laughing. Laughing from his grave.
Oh, Paul, that's nonsense. I don't hear anything.
He's laughing at us, Phyllis. He's responsible for everything going wrong with me.
Paul, please.
I never should have married. I never should have married.
Paul, stop. Stop. You don't know what you're saying.
Oh, yes,
dear.
I do. I know I'm through with everything.
Oh,
I can't
no.
stop my father from hating or from destroying me. It's no use, Phyllis. It's no use. I'm through. I'm through. I tell you, I'm through.
Part 2 of Black Interlude follows in just a moment. now back to Black Interlude and Warren William. Next day, Phyllis and I motored out to the mental institution where Paul had been taken. The late Francis X. Blair had a fight on his hands, whether he knew it or not.
For a while, Mr. O'Connell, we thought he was going to recover rapidly, but then he got worse. We've been giving him shock treatments, therapy, and the usual correctives for his type of illness, but unfortunately...
We appreciate everything that's been done for him, Doctor. But I do have some rather interesting facts, which I hope may be of benefit in treating him. You see, Doctor, I represented his father legally. For the next hour, I told the doctor what I knew about the strange case of Paul Blair. I told him of a plan I had that might possibly help to restore the young man's reason. It was a gamble, I knew, but it was time to put our cards on the table. It was now or never. After hearing me out, the doctor agreed to my plan. We left without seeing Paul, but in a happier frame of mind. Later that afternoon, I called upon a friend of mine, a radio broadcasting executive. I told him the story.
What you're asking me to do may cost my job, John, but it's worth the chance. Let's see. I've got a spot tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock. We're changing programs. I'll sandwich your show in, but only for one day, mind you.
Believe me, Joe, I appreciate that one day.
But if my switchboard is clogged with an angry mob calling for my neck, you know what you'd better do, don't you?
Yes, I do. I'll start running. At 3:15 the next day, everything was in readiness for the experiment. A radio had been slipped into Paul's room. Phyllis, the doctor, and I stood outside his partly open door, waiting for the moment that was to lift him from his black interlude or to plunge him forever into the half-world of fantasy. Dejectedly, Paul sat in his chair, gazing off into nowhere. He looked forlorn, despondent. Our plan was a shot in the dark, but we were all praying for it to hit the mark. And then, at 3:00...
Ladies and gentlemen, a new program is making its debut at this time that I hope you'll enjoy. It's Happy Valley, the story of a disabled war veteran who comes back to his home in Happy Valley and to the girl he left behind. Can a blind hero readjust himself to the ways of normal life? Can he pick up the threads of his old world, yes, his old love, and go on as before? The story of Happy Valley is being reenacted today in towns all over the world. Real, true-to-life stories that have been born in the horror of war. If our Happy Valley can aid in the readjustment of just one disabled veteran, then we feel our cause has been most worthy. And now, to Happy Valley.
You see him? Look, look, he's heard. He's looking at the radio. Oh, pray, Mr. O'Connell, pray.
Folks of Happy Valley, as you all know, we're down here at the station today to welcome back our friend and neighbor, Sergeant John Watson. Ago, he left us to serve his country. He was just a boy then, and now he's coming back, a hero and a man.
Look, Doctor. He's walking over to the radio. He's smiling.
Let's give Johnny a welcome he'll never forget as long as he lives. I don't have to tell you that he won't be able to see us. He can only hear us. We all know that John Watson is blind. All right, now, let's let him know we mean what we say.
Paul was listening intently now, almost eagerly. Hands in the pockets of his dressing robe, he was pacing the floor excitedly. Would our desperate gamble work out? It had to.
Welcome home, Sergeant Watson. We're all mighty happy to have you back. And we're proud of what you've done, down to the last man of us. I haven't got the key to the town to offer you. You won't need it. Every home here in Happy Valley is your home, son. Yes, all yours, from now on in.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks a lot. You don't know what this means to me after being gone 5 years and two of it spent in a hospital. I can't see you, but I feel you, and it's the best feeling I've had in a long, long time.
Doctor, Mr. O'Connell, look, Paul, he's fallen. Maybe he's...
Turn off the radio, please.
Go on.
Here, Mr. O'Connell, give me a hand. We'll carry him over to the bed. Careful.
Move that pillow, Phyllis.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
There we are. Just leave him here, please. I'll ring for the nurse and we'll attend to him immediately.
Oh, Doctor, maybe we shouldn't have done this.
Well, there's nothing to worry about for the moment, but I'll have to ask both of you to leave now. I'm sorry, Mr. O'Connell, that the experiment didn't work.
No, I'm sorry, too, Doctor. Probably I let my hopes get the better of me.
I'll let you know later whether or not this afternoon's experiment had any violent reaction. I'm afraid,
yes,
though...
Yes, Doctor. I'm afraid that I made a jumble of the whole business. Thank you again. I'll call you later. Our return trip was a bitter one. We'd taken a chance and lost. Instead of shocking Paul out of his mental depression, my idea had caused a complete collapse. As we walked slowly into the Blair apartment...
Excuse me, Mr. O'Connell. Yes?
Is Mr. O'Connell there? This is Joe Parnell at the radio station. I've been trying to locate him for an hour.
For you, Mr. O'Connell.
Thank you, Phyllis. Hello?
John, where in the world have you been? I've called you everywhere.
I just this moment came back from the hospital.
Well, the switchboard's been swamped, all right, just as I was afraid of. Only listen to this. Happy Valley is a smash hit. Hundreds of people have called and wired their congratulations.
Well, I'm happy to hear it, Joe. Only...
For heaven's sakes, only what?
Only that the idea backfired, Joe. Paul Blair hurt his show at the hospital and collapsed before it was half over. The shock was too severe. We fear for the very worst. For three long, never-ending days, Paul Blair lay unconscious on his bed in the sanatorium. I felt chagrined, angry that I'd permitted myself to take such a desperate chance. I wondered through those long hours of Paul's black interlude whether or not the evil voice of his dead father was reaching him. Had Francis X. Blair achieved his bitter revenge even from the depths of his grave? Phyllis and I waited impatiently to learn the answer.
Yes?
Hello?
Mrs. Blair, this is Dr. Fry.
Yes, Doctor, what is it? What is it?
Paul regained consciousness about an hour ago. I'm very happy to say he appears to be quite rational. He's asking for you.
Oh, thank you, Doctor, thank you. Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. Oh, Paul. Paul, darling. Oh,
I heard it, Phyllis. I heard Happy Valley.
Yes, Doctor.
Oh, it was wonderful. Imagine my show, my first show on the air.
Yes, Paul, I know. Mr. O'Connell and I were here when you heard it. Wasn't it wonderful?
And you'll be happy to know, Paul, that your show is a smash hit. Service organizations everywhere are behind it. It's on the air to stay.
Oh, I must get well, get strong in a hurry. Every day is precious to me now. I've new ideas, new shows. And I have you, Phyllis. I know now that our world's going to be new and beautiful.
Yes, dear.
And I know, too, that Dad finally forgave me. You see, after I heard the show, he stopped laughing. Maybe he heard it, too.
Warren William will be back in just a moment to tell you what the official records say about the probate cause of the black interlude. But first, here is a word from our sponsor.
Try and get back to that because we're running short on time. Marco's in the studio. This plays out for a while. I wanted to try and get another Mel Blanc song in here. before the end, but you're listening to the Black Interlude on a program called I Devise and Bequeath. It's episode number 3. I don't have an original air date on that. It's kind of an obscure one I just happened to get from old-time radio, CAT.com. This is Arthur with the Grand Hour. Well, I'm probably just going to cut it and play. I am just going to cut it. Forget it. I'll let Marco have the aux cord. Too much dead air. I can't reach it. This is Mel Blanc and Henry Corden as the voice of Fred Flintstone. The voice of Fred Flintstone was done by Alan Reed. You could hear him earlier on the Mel Blanc show that I played at the top of the hour on the new radio. This is kind of a fun one. Thanks for listening. After this, Marco will be up. Wake up, sleepyhead. Have a nice morning. It's the 12th of December.
Set. Never separated yet. In fact, we are the indisputable. It's positively irrefutable. You might say we're me and mutable teammates. Scene. Nothing ever comes between us, cause we are the most reliable, definitely undeniable. It's like we're you and I above teammates, teammates, we. When I broke my arm last summer, you are the captain.
What else could I do?
With teammates through and through, me and you.
Teammates,
teammates, teammates. When I exercise, it's you who always starts breathing fast.
How else could it be?
We're suited to a T, you and me.
Teammates, teammates, teammates. Now that's the long and short of it. Beyond the bridge report of it. The starboard and the port.